I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of a Middle East that hosted talks to avert nuclear war. The Ukraine peace talks came ahead of today's UN Security and General Assembly meetings about the NATO proxy war on Russia. Today is 3 years since Vladimir Putin finally understood the duplicity of the Minsk agreements and moved Russian forces to protect the civilians persecuted and bombed with NATO weapons since the US coup in Kiev in 2014. This, as Trump, at home, tries to revolutionise government under the stewardship of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, already revealing shocking levels of corruption at the heart of the republic. Surely one of the inspirations for DOGE and for Trump's new priorities has been that icon of libertarianism in America, Dr. Ron Paul, recently asked by Elon Musk to run the Federal Reserve. The veteran congressman who ran for the White House 3 times and who is the father of U.S. Senator Rand Paul, chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, joins me now from Clute, Texas. Dr. Paul, thanks so much for coming back on. Before we get to Trump's peace initiative, what's your understanding of the scale of waste of U.S. public money as revealed by Elon Musk's DOGE?
Even though for decades, I've been talking about this and said it would lead to a disaster, when it was finally revealed in more detail, it's still, even with my anticipation, it's still rather shocking and annoying, you know, how much trouble we're facing. And when I looked at the employees of USAID, it's still shocking. But I'm not surprised at all. And I think there's a reason for this, and that is our position as the manager of an empire, and we have the military might of all the nations of the world, and we own the reserve currency of the world. It's human nature to abuse that and take advantage of it, and it's natural for our allies and non-allies will assume that the dollars will flow forever, and they use the dollars, and we end up abusing it, and the abuse is measured by the debt. And if anybody's concerned about what has happened in the past and what we have to deal with, it's the debt of $37 trillion. And I think that's why people are very interested in DOGE, because we're finally maybe paying attention to this. And so some of us are very supportive of it, but we keep our fingers crossed because we want to see it and to be true believers.
Yeah, I'll get on to currency and how effective the administration will be at actually making change in a second. But actually, from the revelations, you mentioned USAID. I mean, your presidential bids were presumably sabotaged in some ways by some of this this kind of corruption money, which was outside the United States used to destabilize democracies all around the world. Presumably in your country as well, it was used to kind of promote certain ideas at the expense of real democracy in your country?
Well, the whole system gets changed and everybody suffers the consequences. It is true that if they want to interfere with freedom of speech and campaigning and business interests and foreign policy, then they go out of their way to really abuse the First Amendment and get people into trouble. But if you just inflate it, the currency, and debase the currency, and you didn't have all that extra mischief making use of it and trying to build powers faster and bigger, there still would be a mess, because if you don't have a definable currency, if you don't know what the unit of account is, and it's endlessly being created, it encourages debt, it encourages the inflation of prices and the devaluation of the currency, and that is what's happened. But that all occurs, and another thing that generally is ignored, that is the malinvestment, which is sort of automatic. You know, if people who are unknowledgeable about the money issue, if they say, oh, you know what, interest rates are 2%, you can get a house mortgage at 2%. They may go out and buy a house and splurge and get a big house because interest rates are low. But after time, you have to pay for that because that was really borrowed money, and it distorts the marketplaces. So there's all kinds of abuses. There's going to be more wars. There's going to be more speculation. There's going to be bigger government. And there's going to be a lot more bubbles to deal with. But the worst thing is, there's always a challenge to liberty. And right now, I think the biggest problem that we face with the debasement of our currency is the fact that it causes dissension. You know, the rich against the poor. And people say to me, oh, the business people are gouging. We have to stop that. Oh, yes, we have to stop all this nonsense going on. We're out of money. So please send me more money. I can't buy my groceries. So it's that distortion that occurs. So a lot of it is evil and deliberate, and the special recipients know that. But there's the middle class and the poor, and many are the victims of the destruction of money because the very wealthy can compensate. But what they can't compensate for, it eventually leads to political upheaval and dissension, and we're starting to see that. And that is really my biggest concern, because the people get angry, and if they get angry and they don't understand why the inflation is that's why that's why Doge is good. They're at least pointing out it's suspending, but they have to go to the next step. What do they do with that? They print money on it as a tax on the poor and the middle class. So they have to connect it. But if it's just, if you just say, well, we discovered this and now we have to do something about it, they have to see the connection. But I think it's the economic policies that have been preached in our colleges, you know, for a good many years, 50 years, starting with the Keynesians. And they teach us in school. And most of the people that I met in Congress, you know, other members, they were decent people, generally speaking. I tried to get along with all of them, but they didn't have any idea why I voted my way when I started. They were just dumbfounded, and most of them never heard of Mises and Hayek and Austrian economics and personal liberty and what the founders really wanted us to do about our foreign policy and these other things. They're just there, you know, to be a congressman, and but that doesn't include everybody, obviously.
Let alone Marx, what one could say. You've tried to neutralize the ignorance for years. You dedicated your life to trying to educate the American public. Now, as regards the printing of money with any efficiency gains, maybe they won't, because Elon Musk mentioning on his platform that you could be head of the Federal Reserve. Was it a joke, or could you run the Federal Reserve and truly not continue this policy of quantitative easing to completely distort your economy and make the poor poorer?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know Musk, and I don't know what his motivations are, and I don't know whether it's personal.
What did you think when you saw it? What did you think when you heard first Elon Musk had said that?
Well, I'm pleased with it. I'm pleased that there's attention given to something I've been working hard for 25, 30 years to get attention to this issue. So I'm delighted that that's happening. But I don't get excited because I'm getting recognition. I get excited because libertarianism, hard money, and the answer to our dilemmas. And it's I deal with it in not just this last administration or even 200 years ago. I deal in all time of history, because this contest between the good and evil has existed for a long time. And I happen to be a strong believer in natural law. And this other law, the government law, is what everybody follows. So I think it's part of that argument that when things come up like, oh, you know, that what he said was right, I don't look at that as personal, because I didn't create the views that I talk about, because that has come from, you know, reading and studying. So when people ask me what to do, I said, you know, what you need to do is make sure you understand what liberty is all about and the morality that it's based on. And I think our founders, many of them, warned us, you know, we're giving you a republic, but it won't work if the people do not remain moral and there's a moral response to the liberty that may have been granted. So I see it in a big picture, but I'm delighted with the other, and I work with them. I try to help. I try to help those who want to cut spending to understand it. But a lot of times, I have for years always said, it took me a lot of years to unlearn the things I was taught in my government schools.
It's been such a long time coming. They're now synthesis between Hayek and Marx, arguably. But we don't have time to get into that, because I want to also talk about Ukraine. But before that, what do you make of Musk talking about Fort Knox and gold? What impact is that going to have? And what's the significance of that? People might not understand. Why are they talking about the need to monitor and audit the gold reserves?
Well, for centuries, governments have gone through cycles. They may have a sound currency, but eventually the government abuses it, runs up debt, and then they destroy the monetary system. But when you have a calamity, you know, something as serious as Venezuela, then the collapse occurs, then you have to rebuild. And many times this has happened, they always resort to something of real value that people can know about, define, touch, and make it understand that it's useful. And I think that is what's starting to happen. You know, for 42 years, we as Americans weren't even allowed to own gold from 1933 up until 1975. And I thought 1975, of course, I considered 1971 the closing of the gold window, the announcement we're dead broke. We're dishonest. We don't honor our commitment. But by 1975, they re-legalized, a lot of us encouraged that, to at least, they said, well, gold isn't money. You know, the Federal Reserve Chairman told me, gold is not money. Well, gold is money. And that's why I think it was very important that we were allowed to own gold again. And so what did the market do? They adjusted the dollar-gold relationship. Gold, the government claimed, $35 an ounce, that's the relationship, and we're king, and we're going to continue to inflate. But what has happened? Gold has gone to nearly $3,000, and at the rate they're spending and doing, why the people should pay attention to this issue that for years it was brushed off because people were intimidated, and our empire lasted, and people got richer. But right now, the confidence is being lost, and that's why I think it's very significant of the BRICS movement. They're lining it up and doing it, and also we're seeing a sign that the various central banks are buying gold, and that is necessary to have a restoration of a sound currency and liquidate and take care of all that debt and start all over again. So we see signs.
But is that to do with Elon Musk going to Fort Knox?
Well, yeah, we don't know whether the gold's there. You know, when I was on the Gold Commission, Jesse Helms and I had a bill passed to have the Gold Commission petition at the Gold Commission in 1981. And I asked for a record. I had the staff, there were 17 members of that commission. I said, this at least vote and say, you ought to find out if we have the gold, if you want to study the monetary issue. So we had a vote on it. And out of the 17, we had only two people, myself and one other person, say, oh, yeah, we ought to check and find out if the gold is there.
Dr. Ron Paul, I'll stop you there. More from the veteran Texas congressman and thrice U.S. presidential candidate after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the veteran Texas congressman and thrice U.S. presidential candidate, Dr. Ron Paul. Dr. Paul, you were just saying at the end of part one, you tried to get an audit of gold reserves back, way back. And that's what Musk and your son, Senator Rand Paul, may be trying to do. Well, just explain, though, why you thought they didn't want the audit back then and how corrupt it was that you couldn't get the audit when you wanted it.
Well, they did an audit, but it was a fake audit in 1974. And I think there are like 17 major areas to investigate and audit. But they never did assays, and they never told how much of that gold is loaned out. They only opened one section. So it was just fake, you know. No, I think they don't want us to know, and that's why they, I want to know about the gold, but I want to know about everything the Fed does, internationally if in particular, because there's been tremendous trust placed in the United States, but the distortion is so bad. I see what has happened in this past year is the end of all this is coming. We're seeing it winding down, and the system will change, because no matter how powerful the armies are and no matter how powerful the Federal Reserve is and how much influence there is, eventually markets will dictate. And that's why the Bretton Woods broke down. It was the market that did that, you know. But the foreign holders of dollars, they realized we were running out of gold. People trusted it, and then the trust was lost. So at the last minute, they retained some of the gold, but we got rid of more than half our gold, a huge amount of gold.
You mentioned BRICS and how those BRICS nations, I'm speaking to you from the UAE, very aware of all of this. Maybe that you think is why Trump attacked BRICS very quickly into the administration. He realizes the significance of the fact other nations are not as corrupted by their elites and do understand the intrinsic value of currency.
I don't know what he thought about. I think it's a good symbol anyway, and it's moving in the right direction. But they're going to do everything possible to prevent auditing the gold and auditing the Federal Reserve. Because they argue that they can't stand the openness, and I said when they want secrecy, when they want not having any other interfere with their policy, what they're doing is they say we don't want the people to know what we're doing. So what they're saying is that they want secrecy, and whether it's gold, if we don't know and not going to find out. So I don't think in the next year you're going to call back and say, Rondé, just open up the doors, and now we know we have exactly how many ounces of gold we have. I think it'll be more complicated than that.
You spent decades in politics, now the Liberty Report that you're doing with Dan McAdams, who was on the other week on Going Underground, talking about also the hundreds of billions wasted of public money on the eternal wars. I know maybe a million may have been killed in Ukraine, this proxy war on Russia. But what did it make you feel to see Donald Trump's initiative come through in the sense that peace talks were at last arranged and the beginning of some kind of peace maybe on the cards? What did it make you feel, given you've been saying this for years?
Well, Daniel and I praise him when he has said he doesn't want to start any new wars. He wants to end the wars. And yet at the same time, I mean, what was this demonstration just recently of our B-52s and other airplanes having a sign of strength? Because if we could just eliminate Iran from the maps and get take care of Gaza and just, sell that to whoever is going to get hold of it, there's a contest there. One is you could say the things that we so far have talked, we get excited and we praise it. But at the same time, the amount of money spent on the demonstration of our Air Force alert, Air Force flying over, what was it, four, how many countries we flew over to say, don't mess around with us. We're still king of the hill. That probably spent more money on the fuel than we've saved so far in Doge. But does that mean I don't think Doge is worth it? No, I think it's excellent because of the information we're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure many of the American people are happy with the investigation, maybe not the so-called mainstream media that are funded by some of the corruption revealed by Elon Musk's Doge. You mentioned Gaza there. The genocide in Gaza, the possibility of war in Iran. For all the praise given to Trump for this, what's your understanding? I mean, is this Miriam Adelson money? Why is Donald Trump seeming to support a possible strike on Iran, perhaps via Israel? Is it because of the people around him? I mean, you don't like Marco Rubio. You never have, and he's the Secretary of State.
Well, I can't really interpret everything that Trump does and explain it. The one thing I say, he is sympathetic. He talks to libertarians. He likes to throw branches out to us and work with us because he wants the support of libertarians because he's had close races. But that doesn't mean that he's going to follow everything that we as libertarians suggest because he just is not there. But what I see there is a victory for the principles of libertarianism, that he can't ignore us. And that's the market standing up for it. It's sort of like why the government had to finally back down on COVID, the insanity of COVID. The people rebelled against it, and it wasn't getting up. The Democrats still haven't figured it out. They're still preaching that nonsense, whether it's COVID type of medical care or whatever. So I think that Trump knows it. I think he's good. And I've talked to him one time, he's a very, engaging person. And I think he's very sincere, but he's very smart. And for what he wants, I think he knows how to do it. But I don't think he is a secret spy for the libertarians. And you know, everything he does is going to be libertarian.
But you believe he wants peace. I mean, even some of his enemies say he does seek peace. He keeps emphasizing the casualties and the dead of war, unlike any other president. Well, but at the same time, as you imply there on Gaza, suddenly when it comes to Israel, it's different. Why this mismatch over Israel?
Well, it's politics. One example is I remember growing up understanding about the Soviet system, and the Soviets always wanted peace. They said on their terms. And so, yes, I think Trump wants it, and I think it's beneficial, and he has good motivations, but it isn't based on the principles of personal freedom and mind our own business, no entangling alliances, sound money, and all these things. He's not exactly into that because we happen to not think tariffs are a very good idea, and he's for that. But I don't reject his notions or say that he's lying to us about this or that. It all goes together, because he's obviously pretty darn shrewd when it comes to politics. And for the stuff they threw at him during that campaign, I mean, he was well-trained, whether it was his media training, his business training, and the Democrats going over the top. Actually, the more they went after him, who ever heard of concocting charges and impeaching a president twice? And then the more they did it, the more popular he became. They made him a hero. So there was a lot of things, and he fed into that.
Yeah,
he's very smart.
He has the mugshot at the Oval Office, I understand. But, I mean, if you were advising Iran, I mean, don't you think the Trump policy so far would make any country like Iran want nuclear weapons? The only chance of Iran's survival with what's coming out of his White House and from his proxy, or maybe it's the other way around, Israel, is they better get nuclear weapons quick.
Yeah, I think so. They certainly, it's certainly none of our business. The only reason they're a threat to us is because we participate. The one map that people should be impressed by is the country of Iran, and look at where we have potential weapons surrounding Iran. They're surrounded the whole way. And I think that's they have been chosen to be the enemy of the day. And I guess Trump sees some benefit, and hopefully I like it, to at least talk to the Russians. And that is good. But to be obsessed with this thing that the greatest terrorists are the Iranians. Well, it all depends on how you define terrorism. What about the not thousands, millions of people since World War II that died at the hands of our foreign policy. If you go look at Gaza, they said, this is terrible. We have to stop this and we got to, you know, rebuild it and this sort of stuff. But where did that rubble come from? It came from the American taxpayers. It was our money and our weapons. Oh, but we didn't lose any troops. Same thing with Ukraine. In 2014, Daniel and I were preaching it. Don't do this. This is a coup. You're throwing out one person and putting somebody else in. And look at what happened to Ukraine. It makes no sense. It's ridiculous and very dangerous. And there's I think one of the biggest motivations for this is, you know, the military industrial complex, they have not gone broke. Hopefully well, some of this stuff will come.
Just finally, Dr. Ron Paul, I've got to ask you, with Doge, with the peace in Ukraine, these different issues, how frightened are you for Donald Trump's life? It seems to revolve around this one individual. Obviously, there's Lieutenant Colonel Tulsi Gabbard there, a few other people there, RFK Jr., who don't fit to the military-industrial complex line. I mean, what happens if Trump is shot and killed? He's already been shot, obviously, once. Yeah. Is there a huge danger that this is just one person and that the entire project can be derailed, libertarian as parts of the project are, just by a bullet?
Oh, I think there's a great danger. And he says he has a special protector. And I guess you could go through what he did and figure somebody's watching after me. How did I survive all this politically and physically? So I think there is danger, but how many presidents have we assassinated throughout our history? And there was a lot less contention about all that. But I think, yeah, he is. But you think as good as he is, he ought to be able to not depend on, you know, Secret Service. That's the whole thing. You don't depend on the FBI. Oh no, he's in the administration. Let's have the FBI check it. Even right now, changing the FBI leader will help. But there's a lot of people deep down in there in the FBI and the CIA. The deep state is very deep into our culture, and they're very powerful. So people should always be concerned. But I argue that I simplify it. Our greatest danger is our loss of liberty and our loss of love for liberty and the people ignoring defend it, because the smaller the government, the more likely it is that you'll have peace and prosperity. That should be the goal of all living people.
Dr. Ron Paul, thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
That's it for the show. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.